We can start.
Oh, Mr. Charles from the Cascade Policy Institute himself. Just sat down.
Oh, we're going. Oh, okay. All right. Let me open a House Committee on Rural Communities Land Use and Water session. Today's April 9th. Let me open a public hearing on House Bill 3417. And let me ask Representative Vice Chair Helm to tell us about this bill. And you can either do it from here or there, whatever your preference.
Mr. Chair, I don't think I'll do this from here. And let me just explain to the committee that the genesis of this bill was to simply provide a little bit extra time for parties to prepare for these regional solutions meetings so that they could come in and be more productive and constructive. The current 7-day period is, as I understand it, keyed to how local land use proceedings handle the disposition of staff reports and information prior to a planning commission hearing or a hearings officer's hearing or maybe even a city council hearing. Folks were feeling like that just isn't enough time for the complex kind of problems that regional solutions teams are tackling. So that's the intent of the bill as introduced, and as I understand it, there have been negotiations among the various players, and there have been changes to the bills to the bill that add some components. And I'm going to let the folks that have been working on that explain that.
Any questions at the moment? Okay, seeing none. Senator Johnson, would you like to come since you're here? I think I've got any other members.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Betsy Johnson. I represent Senate District 16th, and I am very proudly the convener of the Northwest Regional Solutions Team. Let me start by making a couple of sort of overarching statements, and that the first one is that I am a huge fan of this collaborative problem-solving model. This grew out of Oregon Solutions, and Oregon Solutions, of course, had been a methodology to identify seemingly intractable problems. Have the governor recognized that these problems needed a collaborative problem-solving methodology, used Portland State to ascertain whether or not there were enough people that could get to yes to actually work on something. Portland State, as a neutral convener, set the table. The problem statement was defined, the solution or path to a solution was defined, and the group went to work on it. At the table was business, government, academia, philanthropy, and the Oregon solution model worked so well that there was an attempt to try to institutionalize it. That was the genesis and gave rise to Regional Solutions. Regional Solutions has a fixed number of agencies at the table as sort of standing members, and then others brought in as needed, including federal folks, with the idea that you get regulators in early, both state and federal, if there are regulatory issues that need to be dealt with in effectuating the solution to the problem. People really didn't pay very much attention to either Oregon Solutions or Regional Solutions. They seemed to operate in a certain degree of isolation because there was no money. The team members were asked to go out and raise the money from a variety of sources. Two things happened. First of all was funding last legislative session, and the second was the continuing effort to institutionalize Regional Solutions in statute. Sadly, I think Regional Solutions is becoming increasingly bureaucratized and is in some measure morphing into what Regional Solutions was formed to fight against. Now also seems to me to be an ideal time for a new governor to perhaps hit the reset button and take a look at how she is going to use Regional Solutions. I would tell you from my experience, and Commissioner Tony Hyde is behind me, he was the convener on the project to raise 40 $40 million for the Vernonia schools. We did that on our own with no Regional Solutions money. So I'm here to tell you that it can be done. Sadly, I think this bill is an outgrowth of a mythology in this building that Regional Solutions is designed to circumvent permitting and land use requirements on both the state and the federal level. Anything could be farther from the truth. Once the decision about how to proceed has been agreed to, declarations of cooperation have been signed, the team moves forward working on the solution, all applicable local, state, and federal regulatory hurdles have to be overcome before a project can move forward. I perhaps cynically think that the notice period is designed to help marshal forces to kill projects. There have been some projects identified locally that certain folks have issues with because of the kinds of commodities that are carried or because of the kind of work that is being contemplated. So I'm approaching this with some degree of trepidation and some degree of sadness in that as we continue to try to institutionalize RST, it maybe is not working. My request to you today would be to not move this bill, but rather to give Governor Brown opportunity to reassess this program and to put her own brand of how this kind of collaborative problem solving ought to move forward. Key folks that had been involved from the inception in Regional Solutions have changed positions. The governor is still so new. I think she values this process, at least in conversations that I have had with her about it. She values the process, values the kind of folks that are at the table, values the outcomes. For example, in Tillamook County, I'm one of the conveners, along with Commissioner Mark Labhart, doing one of the biggest habitat restoration projects, perhaps on the West Coast, and we've raised all the money ourselves up to this point. We have not tapped into the available Regional Solutions money. The other thing I would tell you is that as the chair of the Economic Development and Transportation Sub of Ways and Means, we have so much more request in that sub than we have ability to respond that right now I don't know what the funding situation is going to look like for Regional Solutions until we have the opportunity to work the issue in committee and get the input from my colleagues on the committee. So my request for you today is rather than heaping more regulation on a process and a series of projects that would benefit from review by Governor Brown, that this bill may be premature. I think one of the hallmarks of Regional Solution has been its nimbleness, has been its ability to drive private sector people to the table to help us effectuate solutions and find funding. Rigid notice periods may have a chilling effect on some of these folks that are very busy business people and generous philanthropists. It may have a chilling effect on their ability to be fully participatory. And if we turn Regional Solutions into a battleground about the nature and the type of projects that spills over into this building, I think it will have lost its efficacy, perhaps in a lethal way. So I oppose the bill today. I would respectfully ask that you give our governor opportunity to review the program and see what changes she'd like to make in it as it moves forward.
Thank you. Questions for the senator?
Only because I can.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Let's start with, let's see here. We've got an equal number of yeses and noes. So I'm going to start with three yeses, and then we'll do three noes, and then back to one yes, then one no. So I've got Kimberly. I'll just go in order. Kimberly Priestley, Peggy Lynch, and Jonathan Manton.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Kimberly Priestley, and I'm here representing Water Watch of Oregon. As Representative Helms stated, House Bill 3417 grants a 30-day public notice and comment period to Regional Solution meetings. Regional Solutions is currently only affording a 7-day public notice and comment period. The 7-day public notice and comment period is proving unworkable because many regional solution projects, implementation projects, are very complex. And 7 days is simply not giving the public adequate time to research the projects, talk to project proponents, write up comments, travel to meetings, which oftentimes are not in their local area. I guess essentially it's not giving, I think, a meaningful public process. We believe that 30 days is a reasonable time period. It allows meaningful consideration of regional priorities and regional implementation projects. Also, I do think it's worth noting that if something is approved as a regional priority or is approved as a regional implementation project, that sends state resources to that project, not only in the form of staff time and, in some cases, funding, but it also prioritizes these projects within the agency. So to the extent that state funds are being expended to the degree that they are on these projects, we believe that it is very important to have a robust public process attached to the regional priorities that are set and the regional implementation projects that are approved. I did want to respond to just a couple statements of Senator Johnson. I appreciate the background on the Oregon solution process. And, just to clarify, the Oregon solution process, we believe, is a very good process. It has three directives to it, three legs to it. One is community, one is economics, and one is environmental. So all they have to be sustainable in all three areas. Moreover, under the Oregon Solutions umbrella, it's very inclusive. All stakeholders are at the table, and that's distinct from the regional solutions process, which the table is made up primarily of business interests and local elected officials and some philanthropic organizations. So there's a distinction, and I guess the reason I'm pointing out the distinction is that in the regional solutions process, as opposed to the Oregon solutions process, the only avenue for public involvement is this what is now the 7-day period. And again, it is proving unworkable for many members of or many Oregonians across the board. So with that, we would urge you to please approve House Bill 3417. We think this is, a step in the right direction just for public involvement on these important projects.
Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon. The League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan grassroots political organization that encourages informed and active participation in government. And that, of course, is why we support having additional time. But I am very intrigued by Senator Johnson's comments today and would love to have that conversation. That is exactly what we are concerned about, is we think regional solutions teams are a great idea. We advocated for natural resource agencies to work together for quite some time, and I can point to at least a 2007 letter that the League wrote related to that whole issue. When we testify before Ways and Means, we talk about natural resource programs, not agencies, because we need to make sure that people work together on things. The problem that we're beginning to see, and the thing that is concerning to us, is these regional advisory committees that were created as a part of House Bill 4015 in 2014. They are a limited number of people for a very large, for a differing number of counties in these 11 regions in the state. And there may be officially the governors, there are governor's appointees, although there's a difference in each of the 11 regions as to whether the committees then appoint additional people to be on these committees. And besides selecting regional priorities, which do the things that Ms. Priestley was mentioning related to the responsibility for agencies to raise these to a higher level of work, one of the other issues is that then the governor, the previous governor, offered $2 million apiece for each of the 11 regions to be able to spend as they saw their regional needs were. Again, sort of not a bad idea, but I'm guessing each of you have one bill in this session that you would love to spend $2 million on. And the concern the League has is that this $2 million expenditure request, granted it still has to come through Ways and Means, has a really limited public view of what's happening. But to give you an idea of what some of the expenditures are, the expenditures can happen outside of having these RACs. RAIN, the regional initiative related between U of O and OSU, is a great project. It will get expenditure. You will spend money on it because it's a good idea. WISE, a water project down in Southern Oregon. Great collaborative effort went through an Oregon Solutions process, I believe. Went through capital construction, and it will probably get funded. It may get more money. There was a housing loan program up in the Hood River area. Could have gone through the housing department. But another great idea. We're excited to see whether or not there's going to be a pilot project out of it. The Mid-Willamette Valley is just suggesting spending $1.5 million on a career tech building. But it's outside of the capital construction process that you all work on. So that's our issue. The bill itself says give us a 30-day notice on the RACs, on the regional advisory committees, and that's good. As a matter of fact, it must work because today I received notices from about 7 or 8 of those different committees for April 28th, May 28th, June 8th, 18th, all the way through to December on some. So it's not as if they can't do the meeting notices. It would be helpful to also have the agendas. I have been working with the governor's office and with Director Leiby on how to make this a more friendly process. But I'm very intrigued by Senator Johnson's discussion about the fact that perhaps it has become a bureaucratic nightmare and that we just need to look at the RAC portion, not the regional solutions teams, but the RAC portion of this operation organization. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. And if you have any information about regional solutions, at the bottom of our letter is the linkage so that you can see the different regions, who's on it, who's not. But I understand that information does not also include the regional priorities right now. Anyway, thank you. I'll be happy to answer any questions. Been following this for a long time.
Great. Thank you, Peggy. Jonathan.
Thank you very much, Chair Clem. My name is Jonathan Manton, members of the committee. Here today on behalf of Central Oregon Land Watch. And I also do some consulting with a group of landowners out in Sisters, some of whom have submitted testimony that's up on OLIS that I would encourage you to read as well. And I wanted to just kind of hit a few points to make sure that we were clear on the intent of what we're trying to do and what the bill actually does. As drafted, would require the notice and comment to go to 30 days instead of 7. Certainly not the intent to stop projects. It's just giving the public a chance to participate in them. The one piece of testimony I would point to, it's by Judge Lipscomb, who's a Salem judge for a while and now lives over in Sisters. And I attended some of the meetings, and his quote is, the current regional solutions process has been the least inclusive public meeting process I've attended in Oregon over the past 40 years. I think going from 7 days to 30 days is not a tremendous ask here. It's not like we're trying to stop the regional solutions program, and I agree entirely with a lot of what Senator Johnson said, and look forward to talking to her further about this, because I think we have similar aims. And I think we can work together on this to hopefully get things back on track. Some of the amendments I'll mention, too, that we put forward would bring about a natural resources protection-oriented seat at the table, so to speak, noting that there are already 5 seats enumerated in the bill that passed last time. And so this would add a person that would be tied in some ways to natural resources protection. That does not mean stopping economic growth or slowing economic growth. And indeed, just the opposite is we want someone who advances and benefits from economic degrowth that's tied to natural resource protection. And for example, Central Oregon, you know, there are all sorts of bike trails and a lot of angling opportunities and hunting opportunities. And if you can't be there without seeing the people in their spandex riding around their bikes, right? Which is not sometimes the nicest sight, in my humble opinion. But there's a bike store that sells all those equipment and bicycles. That's economic development. Protecting kind of the golden goose of Central Oregon, the landscapes that are there, provides all sorts of recreational and travel and tourism-based jobs, which are tied to natural resources protection. There's a great study, and I don't have the number for me, so I'd like to bring it back to you, about the economic impact of hunting and angling and shellfish in Oregon. These are big parts of our economy, and when we ask for a natural resource protection-oriented seat at the table, it's not to slow down projects. It's just to bring a better breadth of different project ideas to the table. It's not like we're asking for five seats out of a six-seat table. We're asking for one seat when there's already five enumerated. This would be a sixth seat. So I think this is a modest approach. I definitely want to make clear that the intent is not to slow projects, stop projects. It's to improve the process, which I think if we do that on the front end with better notice and comment for folks to know what's going on, and then a seat at the table that would allow for more breadth of conversation about choosing the projects. If you do that on the front end, you'd reduce the controversy on the back end. It's a way to advance economic development, not slow it down. And I just wanted to make sure that everyone was clear on that as far as what we're hoping to accomplish with the bill, and would love to carry on the conversation further, because I think if we can talk through some of this, we may be able to address some of the concerns that others have raised. Thank you for your time today.
Okay, any questions for this panel? Oh, I had one and now I've since forgotten it. It was for Peggy.
Wait, you
ah. Okay, let me ask another one. I'll think of my first one. Do we know, was the 30 days modeled after something in particular, some other commissions or something you're on, Peggy? I'm sure you're on a few things.
Chair Clem, I can't imagine why you would say that. I think it was simply a reasonable time frame. The 7 day really was related to asking the county commissioner or the city council, so what kind of days do you give when you have your meetings? But most of those meetings are regularly scheduled. Now, I meet, my county commission meets on Tuesday at 6 p.m. or city council meets on Friday at noon. And so the notice time doesn't really matter so much. These are broad-based meetings. I really do want to go back to what Senator Johnson said. Let's talk about that table. Do we really need the racks? Do we really need three Business Oregon people and one person from the governor office staffing those meetings, plus all of the natural resource and other people who have to show up at those racks? They need to be working as the teams, the RSTs, not the RACs, getting the work done. And so, but I think that's what, sorry to answer your question and not answer it, but I think it was simply a good choice.
Like if I had cut you off and put you on time limit and you were trying to sneak one back in, I would, but I didn't, so I don't care.
Sorry, Chair.
That's fine.
I've been trying to be good this session, not come here very often.
Okay. Yes.
The opportunity, 30 days, yeah.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, I have a little more background on the 30-day. In discussions over HB 4015 in 2014, when the language about public notice and comment was originally negotiated with Greg Wolf, we had a number of people were seeking actually a 60-day public notice and comment period. The governor's office thought 60 days was a bit too long, but assured us that we would, that the public would get a robust public notice and comment period. And so the 30 days, it sort of, it coincides with a lot of public comment periods that we see in the water world. So that was part of it. But it also specifically cut in half the ask from 2014, which we believed was reasonable.
So that's another question. Is the minimum of 30 days notice and opportunity tied together? Meaning, is it a minimum, so that does the public comment period take place before the meeting and
outside of 30 days?
So, Chair Clem, members of the committee, the idea is 30 days prior to the meeting, mm-hmm. you get the public would get a notice of the meeting, and in that notice would be meeting materials that they could then submit comments to the RAC or the appropriate or to the coordinator. So it would be 30 meeting. Days total.
30 days in order to comment, maybe at the, to be provided to people at the meeting?
Yes. Well, ideally it would be provided to the RAC ahead of the meeting, and that is an excellent question. That is one of the details we have raised with Governor's Office with regard to their public implementation plan is, you know, how much of a window do you give the regional advisory committee to actually consider the comments. But as it's written right now, it would just be 30 days from the meeting.
So I should probably have had Annette come up first from the governor's office to just explain the program. But so this looks like it's altering slightly some agreement that they were going to work out a process and bring it back to the 2015 session. So did something come back?
Chair Clem, members of the committee, so soon after the 2014 session, the governor's office came up with a public involvement draft plan that they shared with a number of folks who worked on the bill. There were concerns raised at that time regarding the seven-day public comment period. We were told that that would come back to us later for review, discussion. It didn't come back to us. Instead, there was a Business Oregon rulemaking at the very end of December that went forward that would put the seven-day public comment period into rule. A number of folks commented, raising concerns about the seven-day, and we have been in discussions with the governor's office on that. I believe that has been put on hold. Annette can clarify that. But so that was sort of the process. So there hasn't been a final. I guess my point is I think the state is moving ahead with the 7 day, and we were not. It was not brought back to us.
Okay. You referenced some amendments. We don't have anything in OLS. Are they out there and around? Maybe.
Only. Thank you, Chair Clem. This is Jonathan again for the record. Jonathan Mann. The amendments I think we submitted through Rep. Helms' office, I think they're into Legislative Council, and we just haven't heard back, I think, is the
okay. Any status. More questions for this panel? Okay. Thank you. Well, I'm gonna do the other three. From the other side, then I think I'll have Annette come up. I really should have just had you come up first, but now I feel like since I let them talk, you were one of the, okay. Can you please come and just you tell us who you are and why you're here, but this should help committee members give you some context. This is who runs the program in question.
Good
She's
afternoon.
Here for informational purposes.
Good afternoon, Chair Clem, members of the committee. For the record, my name's Annette Lieba. I'm the Regional Solutions Director in the Governor's Office. Thank you for the opportunity to provide some information today. The Regional Solution Program works locally to identify priorities, solve problems, and align state resources with private, philanthropic, and other public resources to address unique community and economic development needs around the state. I'm here today to provide you information on the existing opportunities for public involvement. As was mentioned in February 2014, the legislature adopted the Regional Solutions Program into statute. Under House Bill 4015, the role of the Regional Solutions Advisory Committee is really to do three things. First, to establish regional priorities for community and economic development in the region. Those priorities are most often drawn from the comprehensive economic development strategies that have been prepared by the economic development districts around the state. Their second role is to assist regional solutions coordinators and teams with connecting to local resources. And then finally, their third role under the statute is to consider, review, and recommend regional implementation project proposals. As was mentioned, House Bill 4015 also required that prior to the 2015 session, the governor's office work with the director of the Department of Administrative Services to develop a process to provide public notice and opportunity in consideration of public comments at regional solutions advisory committees where priorities are identified or implementation projects are considered. We completed the initial public involvement plan in the summer. We started implementing it in July of 2014. Under the current public involvement plan, all meeting dates, times, and locations are published on the Regional Solutions website as soon as the meeting date is established. In many cases, that's more than 30 days ahead of the meeting, but in no case is it less than 7 days. The Regional Solutions website allows anyone to sign up to receive meeting notices and materials by region or for all regions across the state. Meeting agendas and materials are accessible through the Regional Solutions website and are distributed through the State Library listserv 7 days before the meeting. Agendas provide for opportunities to comment where priorities or implementation projects are considered. The public may also submit written comments at any time through the website. When comments are received, they are sent to the appropriate regional solutions coordinator to share with the advisory committee members. And I will note that today we have only received one written comment. While there have been a few glitches in the process, we are constantly working to improve public accessibility to regional solutions advisory committee meetings and materials. And I want to acknowledge that much of the feedback that we've received from the prior panel has been helpful in improving our public access through our website. So that concludes my testimony, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Annette? Okay. Thank you. Okay. Mike and our two commissioners, Al Unger. No. Is it Unger?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Mike Penn.
Yeah. And Tony Hyde?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon.
We don't talk about Ben because he abandoned us and left this committee and the legislature after just one term. So
I'm sorry about that.
He took like $2.4 million of Cornelius's library money with him and then apparently gave him a big fake phony check. I don't know what happened to the rest of it. I think they might get it, but I'm not sure. Go ahead.
As that intro.
Did he give notice?
I think he didn't. He just showed up with his big check.
So Mike MacArthur, Association of Oregon Counties, one hat, convener of North Central Regional Solutions Advisory Committee is the other hat. With both hats, I think this is totally unnecessary. This goes way beyond anything in public meetings law. These are advisory committees. There's a long history of the state using regional approach to economic and community development. You could argue it goes back to 1843 when we divided the state into, or the area the provisional government created into four districts. But more recently, we had regional strategies under Governor Goldschmidt, where money was actually given to the regions to allocate to projects without this kind of bureaucratic overlay. In the Gorge, where I am serving as convener, we have an advisory committee of about 15 people, the five named in statute, of course. Those five then pick another representative group. We have six elected officials representing the three counties, the cities, port districts are represented. We take a long time to prioritize what we think is important to tell you what things might make a difference in our economy locally. We get a lot of folks attending our meetings. It's well publicized. The public's welcome. We have public comment. it just seems to me that to overly bureaucratize this process is just unnecessary at this point. It's a great process. It's working well. It's only been established in this iteration, really, for about 4 years. And as we become established in statute with 4015 and so on, I think it's become clear what the role is of the regional advisory committees. But as has been said here, not only is it to select projects, but it's to solve problems. And so as we need to have state agency folks there, the people from the team, we bring them in. And so really it's on a subject by subject matter. Now I have to work out the agendas with the regional coordinator every time we meet, which is every two or three months. And we need to be nimble. We need to be able to adjust that agenda as things come up. And so our next meeting is April 20th. We're still working on finalizing that agenda. A lot of the main points are already there. They're on the website. People can see it. And it's a wide open process. So I just don't think we ought to go any further in trying to put more strings on this process. Let Governor Brown take a look at it, as Senator Johnson said, and see where we want to go next. But I think it's working quite well as is.
Welcome. Chair Clem and committee members, my name is Alan Unger. I'm a Deschutes County Commissioner, and I'm a member of our Central Oregon Regional Solutions team. I wanted to say everything Mike said, but really what I'll say is when we have our meetings, we don't make decisions. We accept information from groups who are looking for solutions to problems. Citing OSU Cascades, how do we grow our transit system? How do we find solutions to affordable housing? Because right now you can't find a home in Bend to rent. There are none. And I think there's maybe one in Redmond. So we've got real problems. We convene collaborative groups to try to work through these solutions. And we've never worked with planning commissions or city councils or county commissions. We're really there to kind of focus on what are those big issues that the state needs to come together with to solve, to work on. As we talked and heard about Judge Lipscomb, I haven't seen him in one of our meetings, and if he wanted to step up and talk to us, we'd all be engaged with him. So, quite frankly, I don't get it. I think 7 days or whatever is normal and customary works just fine.
Thank you.
Chair Clem, members of the commission, for the record, Tony Hyde, Columbia County Commissioner, and I'm now in my 19th year as a county commissioner, and in my very first year, we appealed to then Kitzhaber 1 to do something to align state agencies to help us with economic development. Because all too often, state agencies were working in silos and they were working against each other without even knowing it. So this is the very premise of regional solutions, which was Oregon Solutions, Community Solutions, GERT, ERT, and lots of other iterations. We, Mike and I in particular, have been at the forefront of this from its very inception in 97. And I think that we finally have gotten to a point where we have a watershed moment here. Regional solutions finally is a point where we have grassroots knowledge coming to the surface about what we're going to focus on in terms of economic development locally. And that's why we have these regions and it's split up the way they are. We now have an economic development district, an EDA, federally recognized district for economic development in every single region of the state. And this mirrors that. When it comes to our priorities, these are really born out of starting with local, by that I mean city economic development committees. They then move up to county economic development committees that then move to regional economic development committees, which are very prescriptive in order to stay as an EDA district. The membership of that EDA district is very prescribed in terms of making sure that we have lots of representation across the landscape. And every year we're required to do a community economic development strategy. That's where these priorities come from. But I also think that we're missing the point in terms of the grassroots knowledge that we can now exercise in spending very, very scant state and federal and county dollars. The most important thing is aligning state agencies around compelling needs for economic development. It's not about the $2 million. It's not about bringing a group together to secretly spend money. This is about aligning state agencies around local issues. to get economic development done in an expedited manner. By expedited, I do not mean circumventing state or local land use laws. What I mean is that everybody's pushing in the same direction because we're not working in silos. This is a really golden opportunity. But in order to have this nimbleness and to be able to, at the last minute, bring in some project that popped up in front of us, we need a short time frame because these things happen quickly and they go away just as quickly. So to bureaucratize this, to excuse the term, I think is a mistake, and it's counter to the very objective of having grassroots knowledge that we can actually utilize. I think it's a very important moment for this state.
Questions for these gentlemen?
Mr. Chair, if I could add one other point that I'd like to elaborate on the issue that was brought up about the housing project in the Mid-Columbia. That's our district. So this is the way that rolled out. We identified housing as a priority. A little bit different in Hood River, Wasco, a little different, Sherman, a little different. But housing was the issue in all three of our counties. And so we brought the Housing Community Services folks there. We talked about the problem. They couldn't help. They were dealing with low-income housing. Our problem was worker housing, the 80 to 120%. And so we set up a program with your help that's now just beginning to roll out because of the bond sale in February for special projects that would deal with that slice of the housing market where we have a gap. And worker housing, really. People can't afford to live in Hood River. Housing stock in Wasco is poor. Sherman, it's just hard to get anybody to live there. But so we're working on that problem and understanding that problem and the nuances of it and why Housing Community Services couldn't help wouldn't have happened if we hadn't had the Regional Solutions Advisory Committee to work that out. And so now we have the project, we have some funding for that project, and we hope to show something that makes a difference in our community.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Angela, Kelly Cook, and let's see here. We can sure be at opposite ends of the spectrum on this issue and still sit together. Doug Riggs from COCO. Which is my daughter's nickname. I just like saying COCO. Come on up.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, Angela Crowley-Cook, Oregon Environmental Council. And thank you for holding this hearing. It's a really important issue. We support the goals of Regional Solution. We like affordable worker housing, economic development all over Oregon. We want people to have jobs. We support all those goals. The issue for us is transparency and public involvement. And so I won't go over what my previous colleagues have said, except for to make one point. It's our understanding that decisions are made at these meetings when it comes to setting priorities. And those are important decisions, what priorities are set, because agencies are required to work on those priorities. And so there are state dollars going towards some of these priorities, and the decisions are made at these meetings. So again, it's a simple request, 30 days public notice and comments so that the public can actually come and take part in these really important decisions. Thank you.
Doug.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Doug Riggs. I'm here on behalf of the Central Oregon Cities Organization. We've been very involved in this process all the way back, 10, 15 years when it had many other iterations and names. I think the entire point of the Regional Solutions team is to expedite a collaborative process to be able to identify ways to work better together, and increasing the amount of notice time by 4 times, I think, is antithetical to the very premise of Regional Solutions. In Central Oregon, I would say the Regional Solutions is one of the few bright, shining lights in the land use process. It's been indicating success and progress and action, which is something we don't often see in the land use process in the state. So something we're very supportive of. I would echo Senator Johnson's caution that we wait until the governor's had a better chance to take a look at this before we add any more delay or red tape. Administrative hurdles for a process that I think has worked in Central Oregon and elsewhere in the state. So I'd urge you to hold off on this bill. We'd be perfectly willing to sit down in the interim and have a discussion, But again, I'd say that what I hear from my counselors, my mayors, my county commissioners, the people we deal with on a regular basis, is that this is one of the most successful programs that we see in state government, and I would hate to do anything that would further delay the kind of progress that we've seen. Thank you.
Questions? One I've got, and Angela, I don't know if you're the right person, Representative Helm, you might be. When it says the process shall provide a minimum of 30 days notice, does that either mean, so some of the testimony seems to be more like agendas. I just read that to be more like the meeting is on this date. But do you know if it's intended to mean the agenda for the meeting versus just the meeting?
Chair Clem and members of the committee, my experience in as being a hearings officer and running hundreds of these here of similar type of proceedings myself, is that the folks that want to participate, they want the meeting materials. They want to know what's the proposal on the table. Are there any comments by specialists or other state agencies? And these can be voluminous records in which they need time to read through. So my intent was that it's not just the posting of an agenda. That's great, and it's great that the website exists, and I love that transparency. It's that these projects are more complex than your average land use project in our own hometown communities, and folks deserve a little more time than 7 days to look through what could be a pretty big stack of papers.
So it isn't meant to just be a meeting date. It's also meant to put the topics to be discussed. That way there's something people could comment on.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that, the reason for that, when I'm holding hearings, in about half of them, and in almost all of them that are controversial, the number one complaint of people is, I just got the staff report, even though it was due 7 days ago. I just got it. I just got the meeting materials. I can't possibly respond here today. And that's just bad for the whole process. That's going to create bad blood and people attacking a project on the back end.
Sorry, I was just thinking about the legislature and how often that gets said here quite regularly. And it usually because it was like 24 hours notice towards the end of session, and they're really angry.
Yeah.
Any further questions for this, either one? Okay. I think that's all for now. I would probably encourage, in terms of like conversation in the interim, Doug, I would probably move that to like conversation in the next week. Okay. With that, let me close the public hearing on House Bill 3417. Is that right? Yeah. And I had a variety of public hearings all set up for us today, and then at their request, everybody pulled their own bills from public hearings. So let's get into a few work sessions. We don't have the paperwork back on 3212 or 2831. So if you're here anxiously waiting what happens on those, you're going to be sorely disappointed.
Do you want to carry those over?
So I will then carry those over to Tuesday, House Bill 3212 and 2831. Okay, so I need to ask let me open a work session on House Bill 3169 and ask Raquel to come up. Colleagues, you might remember Representative Bentz coming to visit us and having some maps, I think, about limited groundwater areas and the desire to study some of these aquifers. And so we've been working with his office and Raquel, and I don't recall whether Water Watch testified or just talked to me privately, but anyway, all of us have been talking. We have a few things we kind of need to get on the record, and then I think everybody's on board. So,
Tell us who you are and why you're here.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, for the record, Raquel Ranciere with the Oregon Water Resources Department. I want to, first of all, recognize Representative Benz for his leadership on water resources issues and for bringing this bill forward. I also, of course, need to state that we are neutral on the bill. The Dash 1 amendments are what are in front of you, and through discussions with Representative Benz, we have developed what we would like to do with this bill in terms of the aquifer study. So the amendments that are before you, it changes the date of the report to 2020. Previously, it said 2015, which would have been impossible for us to meet. And it also adds an activity to the loans that would be eligible for the loans, which is lowering the pump in a well. And that's something that we see commonly, particularly during times of drought, that's needed for these domestic wells. So I wanted to outline real quickly for you what we're seeing on the first section of the bill, which is the aquifer study piece. So what we're thinking in terms of this aquifer study is that we would utilize existing data that we do have. We have a lot of data that hasn't been analyzed that we would like to be able to put into a centralized database, and then use previous reports as well as this existing data then to provide an up-to-date report on the status of the aquifers across the state. I do need to put a caveat in there. There are areas of the state where we don't have enough data, so we would point those out in the report. And so in some cases, you may get back a report that says there's not enough existing data to do this. So we would identify areas of concern, identify areas for potential future development, and then identify areas where we need more information. I do also need to note that this is different than what we typically do in terms of groundwater studies. We typically take a USGS groundwater study approach, and that's something that's still a goal for the department. However, I think this is a great first step, because a USGS study, first of all, our portion of the cost share is usually around $3 to $5 million, usually takes about 5 years to complete, several staff resources in conjunction with, and that doesn't include everything that the USGS contributes to it. So we won't get the level of detail or information about, for example, impacts to stream flows, but we will get some up-to-date information that I think will be helpful to the department, to the public, and ultimately to groundwater users through this process. So I just wanted to lay out kind of what the plan was so that the committee understood that this by no means takes away the importance of USGS groundwater studies. It won't give us all the information in the world about, you know, what's available with aquifers, but it certainly will help advance the information that we do have today. And I think that's all I have for you.
Any questions for Raquel? Okay. So far, nobody's talked at all today, by the way. Just want to point that out. Thank you. Not complaining. I was just noting that. I'm not even sure you're all here, actually. I might just be imagining you. I'm going to move, look for a motion.
Chair Clem, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3169, dated 4/3/15.
My imaginary friend, Vice Chair Post, moves the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3169, dated 4/3/15. Is there any discussion? Any objection?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Gillian.
I just wanted to be sure that Representative Bowles had an opportunity to testify before we move him.
Yes, let's extend the privileges of the committee to former Representative Denise Bowles, who's here, to come forward and talk about whatever you'd like.
The Honorable. Representative Bowles.
No, we're just giving you an opportunity.
Anything you want to talk about.
Okay. Any further discussion on the Dash 1 amendments? Okay. Any objections? Seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Clem, I move House Bill 3169 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the committee Joint Ways and Means.
Vice Chair Post moves House Bill 3169 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the committee joint Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Gilliam.
This is
aye.
Bence's bill.
Representative Bomber?
Aye.
Representative McLean?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Helm?
Aye.
Vice Chair Post?
Aye.
Chair Klum?
Aye. Motion passes and the bill is sent to Ways and Means. Let me open a work session on House Bill 2652. Call, as you may recall, this is the bill that Representatives Escoval and Gorsuch visited us about dealing with the definition of the rural SIP. We don't have any amendments on this that I know of, so I would welcome
your committee has just gone bananas. I don't know what's going on.
Okay. Yeah, could I? Do you have? I just lost my motion maker.
I know. I was waiting for you to finish your conversation. I thought you were still talking.
No.
Because you were kind of explaining.
Yeah, I think that's all I had. Just that this was. It lowers the threshold. It doesn't lower the threshold. So there is a lower threshold of investment required in rural areas than urban areas, and the definition of rural was affixed at this date back in 2002, and I think Grants Pass doesn't meet it anymore, so this moves it up to where Grants Pass would come in, and then something like Hillsborough that once met it would no longer meet it because they've grown long past that definition. So that's the bill for your recollection.
Basically what that was that I just did in radio we call punting.
To get Representative, your co-vice chair, some time to get back. Oh, thank you.
Just teaching you a few.
Okay. Anyway,
Chair Klem, I move House Bill 2652 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Revenue Committee.
Vice Chair Post moves House Bill 2652 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Revenue Committee. Is there any discussion? Vice Chair Ish McLean. Been deputized for the moment. Oh, you're back, sorry.
Thank you, Chair. This bill appears to be well intentioned and I think generally may be good. However, Central Oregon Economic Development, or EDCO, as it's known, does not support the bill. For that reason, I'm a no.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, would the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative Bomber?
Aye.
Representative McLean?
No.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Helm?
Aye.
Vice Chair Post?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. The bill is sent to Revenue. And I don't know that we had heard from that group here. Maybe we'll direct them to Revenue, too, to fill them in on their concerns. Okay. Representative Olson's bill. House bill. Let me open a work session on House Bill 2034.
Chair Klem, I move House Bill 2034 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Helm moves House Bill 2034 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Colleagues, you may not remember this. This was a while ago. Representative Olson came with some folks who farm in a little zone near a park that there was eminent domain authority. It sounds like granted at one point, then taken from the Parks Department for this Willamette River Beltway area. But then there were a couple areas that were exempted from their domain authority. Oh, I've got that backwards. There's a few areas that are still within, I think they had their eminent domain authority restricted at one point,
and there's a few properties that they theoretically could use eminent domain on. This was one of them, and the farmers who farmed that didn't really like living with the threat of eminent domain over them. The Parks Department was here and said that that's not really how they work, but I don't remember whether they said they were. I didn't see it sound like they really wanted their options taken away, but they also didn't sound like they were ever going to use them either. So if that helps refresh anybody on it. I, for myself at least, think it's fine. I don't think they really need the eminent domain authority since nobody else around there is living under eminent domain. But this could be one of those ones where the Senate feels differently or the governor feels differently. I'm not clear. But that's kind of what I know about the bill at this point. I don't have a veto threat letter, but I don't know how anybody feels about it up in the other branches. But to me, it seems like a reasonable set of concerns to allay for the people who live in the area, given there didn't seem to be any plans to do it. And if they really want the people's property, then they could work it out on a willing party, a willing buyer, willing seller basis.
State Parks didn't object.
I don't really object. Just didn't. Are you guys here from the parks? Do you want to tell us, or do you not really want to talk about it? You're welcome to come up. Would you like to hear their views?
I would like to remember. I thought they were neutral, too.
Yeah.
We don't care.
Yeah.
They're not raising Campbell.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, my name is Chris Havel. I'm with the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. Yeah, we're officially neutral on this. We're not opposed to it. To your question, it's not going to change the way we operate in the Bowers Rock area down there near Albany. We have no plans to use eminent domain powers there or anywhere else. We don't operate that way. We work with willing sellers. It's good having it in our tool bag, but it's not necessary for our operations at Bowers Rock. So that's why we're neutral on it.
Okay. That's helpful. Any further discussion? Okay, seeing none then, no one's still really talking at all. Would you please call the roll?
Representative Gillian.
Aye.
Representative Gomberg?
I'm neutral too, but I'll vote yes.
Oh, okay.
Representative McClain?
Yes.
Representative Witt?
Feeling kind of officially neutral.
Right. I'm willing to accept that as a vote and see if someone comes down here from the first office.
I'd recommend against that.
Oh, thank you.
Recommend against it? No, no.
Vice Chair Holm?
Now everybody's got me confused.
Vice Chair Post?
Aye.
Chair Plum?
Aye. Motion passes, and we will ask Representative Olson to carry the bill. He would like that.
Thank you.
Now, let's talk about one of my bills while Aaron's in the room back there. Okay, let me open a work session on House Bill 2938. Colleagues, this was one of my bills that I was I didn't do a good job of explaining that day. I didn't feel, so I'll just try one more time here real quickly. This is the issue of if a county, for example, is having a city handle a service on their behalf and issuing some type of building permits so they don't have to do it, that the city may not use that as an opportunity to require a county resident to sign an agreement that they will voluntarily annex in order to get their county service.
Okay, question for you.
Yeah. And the league was opposed to it, if I recall correctly.
Yeah. My Judiciary Committee, Representative Williamson, does a wonderful job of giving real-world stories so that people like me can understand it. So, for instance...
Yes. So, for example, there was a owner of a steel fabricator here in Salem. They're located in Marion County, not in a city. And they wanted to put up a shop for their business. And Marion County doesn't issue that kind of permit. They contract with the city of Salem just for money-saving purposes
when there's not that many buildings, why have a whole county building permit department when you could contract with the city who's already got one? So the city of Salem, he's not a resident. The property is not in the city of Salem, but they are doing the service on behalf of Marion County, So he came and testified to this committee once before in this bill, and he went down to the city and was charged the fee for the building permit, which was fine. Then was said, you need to also sign this paper that says you will agree to voluntarily annex at such time as the city wants to annex you. And he said, I don't want to do that. And they said, then you're not getting your building permit. And he said, I'm not in the city. And they said, well, you're not getting your building permit if you don't sign this paper. So he signed the paper because he needed it, because he had just hired people and he needed to expand the warehouse at their fabrication facility. So then at some point later, the city's boundary came up against the edge of his property. And because he had already signed that, he was deemed as a voluntary willing annexer, which is a different process than somebody who is being annexed in a kind of involuntary manner. There's a process called the triple majority annexation, which is where the owner of the property wants to be annexed. He was deemed wanting to be annexed, even though he didn't want to be annexed. They then proceeded to charge him for the election cost to vote on whether to annex him, even though he did not want to be annexed. So he paid a few thousand more dollars, and then he voted. Oh, then at that time, he wasn't allowed to vote in the election, so then the people of Salem voted on whether to annex him in the election that he paid for, and he couldn't vote. Now, we've since changed the law where he would have been able to vote, but it passed by more than one vote, so his one no vote wouldn't have mattered anyway. So he got annexed and is now in the city, all because he wanted to put up a shop in the county, and Marion County had no building permit office in order to do it. So what this says is if the city is doing a service on behalf of the county, you cannot use that opportunity to make someone sign an agreement that they will voluntarily submit to annexation.
That's not right. We need a bill to address that.
I think that's this bill.
Well, I thought that's what it was, but I appreciate that illustration.
Now, to be fair, the city's response initially was we didn't do that. And then when he came here, they said, yeah, we looked into it. And actually, there was an over-aggressive city staff member, and we do not do that anymore. So I don't think it is the practice of many cities to do that. I may have furnished you a legislative council opinion saying it's already currently illegal to be doing this, but this would make it really clear. I think we did have somebody come and say it's still happening, though. No. So this, for example, is different than somebody who is attaching themselves to city services like a city sewer or water system. This is when a city is doing a service on behalf of another jurisdiction. Other questions about that? Mm-hmm. You're welcome to come and rebut that. It's unfair to me just to do this in a work session. Okay.
Looks like everyone wants to justice.
I'd take a motion
Chair
willing
Clem,
to make one. I don't know how I did.
You did fine. Thank you. Chair Clem, I move House Bill 2938 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Post moves House Bill 2938 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
As long as you give that illustration, short version, but that illustration on the floor.
I'm happy to. Okay. I'll even bring the guy.
The whole thing?
Yeah, he can sit in the gallery. He can come to the floor.
I think that would be very nice.
The whole thing. Representative Gilliam.
Mr. Chair, despite my not understanding why you don't like heavy-handed blackmail, yes. And I don't understand why anybody would join you on this bill. I'm a yes.
Oh, thank you. Further discussion?
I think we ought to save on the trip to the House.
I've got this bill through the House before. She usually foils me in the Senate, so I don't have necessarily high hopes there, but I'm happy for some support today if you're willing. Only point of discussion. Okay, with that, with the further discussion, will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Gilliam.
Aye.
Representative Domberg?
Aye.
Representative McLean?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Helm?
Aye.
Vice Chair Post?
Aye.
Chair Clem?
Aye. Motion passes, and the bill is sent to the floor, and I will carry it and tell the story. Okay, so I need to, I've already carried over the other two. Let me look and make sure I haven't missed anything, because after this I'm in trouble for not being able to carry over things. So I'll just reiterate 3212 and 2938. I'll just give you a quick little update on 3212. This was the Measure 49 related, or I'm asking that we align the ability for a farmer to assert that they were damaged by a governmental regulation and ask for either compensation or waiver with the forestry provisions of Measure 49. I had one gentleman from the Department of Ag, Jim Johnson, come to the hearing and say they had a little bit of concern. For example, would they be able to regulate still livestock control areas if without, like, if someone had an animal that was diseased and was causing disease among other animals, would they be allowed to regulate that in a quarantine kind of situation without having to compensate the person for it, which is actually a fairly legitimate question. So I am still trying to work that through to see how those things apply. But that's, oh, the other thing was Multnomah County asked, for example, if they wanted to regulate the signage around farm stands in the city, would they have to compensate somebody if they told them you can't just put your farm stand sign that big and in that spot, you need to go put it smaller and in this spot, would they have to compensate the people? So we're looking into some of these issues. I don't know if we'll have them resolved totally for Tuesday, but that's that one. And with that, anything else for the order? Great. Thanks for your attention, and I'll adjourn the committee.